Don't mess with what's working. The money is in the boring.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one to many, and perhaps the most important conversation, one to self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Sally Curtis. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Sally. One, she's worked with speakers, coaches, and consultants for 15 years, filling rooms and putting bums in seats for international events. She's helping them be more profitable by creating leverage and saving time through content repurposing. Two, Sally is a whiz at turning your existing content and collateral into new profits, and she does it for you. Doesn't just tell you how to do it, she does it. Three, Sally currently is the chapter president of the South Australian Professional Speakers of Australia. Where else would be the South Australian professional speakers, but in Australia. And fourth, here's a bonus point. Sally sold her horses so she could race ferrets. And I imagine that the ferrets aren't as much fun to ride. Sally Curtis, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you very much, George. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you.
It's a delight talking with you in Australia. Thank you for getting up early for our meeting here. Sally, content is critical in promoting, especially online, whether it's your own website, whether it's social media, and of course, it's an effort to create content. So if there are ways we can repurpose, reuse, recycle our content, it's got to make things easier for us, does it?
Yeah, absolutely. From what I find is a lot of the speakers I work with get so into the habit of creating long form content that they almost start getting on a new hamster wheel. So I get them when they start to get fatigued again through creating long form content. What I mean by long form is their books, their white papers, their articles, and their blogs and those sorts of things. And there is so much bite-size gold within that long form content that we can actually capture those pivotal moments, those teachable lessons, that bite-sized chunk that's going to make a difference to somebody, and turn it into a visual graphic, which is a visual graphic tile, if you think like a postcard, which is a great way to increase engagement and increase connection with an audience when it's turned into something that's bite-sized.
And in the books and the reports and the white papers and the blog posts don't go away. We still need words to gather the information. But within the words, there are key points, key reminders. And if we can, it seems to me, if we could represent those key points in a visual way, that it's going to, people need to be reminded.
Absolutely. And that's the key thing. When your intended message is to create an impact for your audience, and you've got all of this great content, one of my beliefs is that your clients need to be able to consume you on their worst day. So if someone's having, if you think back to your own scenario, when you're having a really bad day, the last thing you want to do is read a long email. And that's when we, you know, get into ticking and flicking emails. So if you transport or parallel that across your articles, people aren't going to want to read a long article when they're having a bad day. So if you're wanting to create that impact by making it bite-sized, you're actually making it easy to consume, easy for them to understand, and easy for them to remain connected to you even when they're having a very, very bad day.
And that makes sense to me, because there's some days when I pick up the newspaper, I read the headlines and I read the comics.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. There you go. And that's the whole thing. What you've done there is you've automatically gone, it's that is too hard. I'm going to read something that's fun, that's entertaining, that's inspiring, and potentially educational. And those little snippets are exactly what's occurred for you. So you've gravitated to something that's going to help you have forward movement that day or be in more of an inspired or educated state. And that's exactly what turning that long form content into that bite-sized content enables your audience to have with their messaging is get it, much more intentional.
Now, Sally, I can see where a writing and publishing a book, writing and publishing a white paper, that conveys credibility and authority that one can refer to and say, well, read my white paper on that, or here's my book. What do the bite-size bits do? What do they do for that same person?
So what that really enables them to do is they've gained their credibility, but what happens is they've got their credibility and their authority pieces, but they often lack the visibility or the consistency. They're not leveraging that credibility. So when somebody doesn't want to consume a lot of content, they still want to learn, just like you did with the paper. They still want to be educated. They still want to be entertained. And by having a library of reusable brand assets that are bite-sized, which are your teachable moments, your rants, your little stories, your tips, your one, two, three, whatever it is that's within your content that can be extracted into something that creates a bite-sized message for somebody, then that's how you're going to create your consistency and visibility and remain at all times connected to your audience. Because it's not about you connecting to them, it's about them connecting with you, which means we need to make it easy. Otherwise, your attended message gets lost.
So we need to reach our clients in a way that is easy for them, that feels useful to them, and they might even, and I suppose, would it be ideal, a good test is if I put out a bite-sized piece of content or I put out content, wouldn't it be neat if people started quoting me?
Yes, absolutely. And isn't
Not
that what?
just Einstein and Richard Branson, but they start quoting me as well.
Absolutely. And that's where, when you have written a white paper, and these are the things that I see a white paper or a book, we all have, and we talked about this earlier, I have Sally-isms, but we all have something, our name-isms. We've all got rants. We've all got particular sayings that we say. And if you're extracting them and bringing them to your audience in a new way, and that repetition of it coming out helps people identify with you. And then those bite-sized bits go, oh, that's one of Sally's or that's one of George's pieces because it becomes instantly recognizable. And see, here's the difference with visibility. Now you're recognizable. Now you're familiar. And one of the things that I find when you've got that authority piece, you've broken it down, you're now educating, inspiring, and helping your audience have forward movement, is often what happens is these people that are consuming you and engaging with you, they actually start to send you referrals and they start talking about you. And this is before they actually even do business with you. So the bit they do business with you after they've actually become an advocate of you and they've started to send people to you. And that's where those repeatable or quotable messages make it easy for them to tell a story about you because it was bite-size again.
And I've seen posts on LinkedIn or other social medias where someone has someone some one person has posted it, and then someone who I know reads it and tags me and say, "Hey, George, what do you think?" So they're sharing it with me or sharing it with other people, and it's again like saying, "Here's a quote that, or I like the way this person said it." And remember, we had that conversation.
Correct. And that's the key thing too. When you are easy to consume, And think about a long email. When you're easy to consume, you're easy to share. If you've had the experience where you get a really lengthy email, and even though it was good, you're less inclined to share it with someone because you don't want to add to their fatigue. Because what's currently happening in the world at the moment is we're fatigued as individuals, but our clients are fatigued as well. So we need to make everything easy for them. So if you turn your longer form content and still get the same messages out there and still have the same authority, but by turning it into that bite size, you're actually easy to consume, but easy to share instantaneously. And that's all about having that consistency.
Sally, what are the components, the elements of a ideal bite-sized piece of content?
Oh, great question. I love that, George. Thank you so much. So one of the things that I believe is very, very important is that the image or the, whatever the imagery that you use, again, think of a postcard, whatever the image you use, the image positions the viewer. So let's just catch that. So if I was to say to you, I've got a client, for example, that her message is don't guess, assess. So she works in that personal performance space. Now, if I was to say to you that her three niches are aged care, corporate executives, and world champion athletes, if you think of those three words, there's three very different imagery that we pull to our brain, very different recall. So if you've got one simple message, but you've got very distinct segments or client niches, then you need to use imagery that stops the scroll. So when you've got imagery in her case that's of a corporate executive, the corporate executives will instantly relate to that and that will be familiar to them. Whereas they won't see the aged care ones, and they might not see the performance athlete ones as well. So just with that quick sort of visual demonstration as we're talking about it, one of the key elements is making sure the imagery resonates, helps stop the scroll, or positions the viewer, or helps the viewer sort through everything that they're scrolling through on the social media. So the imagery becomes a sorting mechanism. And that includes also your brand styling, etc., as well. The other key thing is to keep it simple. When we start to think of tiles, we start to try to jam too much stuff on a tile, and it starts to become like Death Pie PowerPoint. So keep the elements really simple, keep them one-liners, keep them, three little tips, but add whatever context you need to above the tile. So you've still got room to be able to communicate with your person on the social media platform, but you've got your tile underneath it. The other element with the tile is to make it engaging. So the engagement element is also within the tile context copy, and the tile is to invite them to do something next. Let me, we call it a call to action. I like to call it an invitation. Invite them along the journey with you, because by building the engagement, this is how you build the sharing and the commenting, etc. So invite them to do so.
And I didn't think of that. I certainly could imagine the image and a line, but then a call to action, an invitation to do something, whether it's to share or comment or respond, just elicit some kind of action from them.
Absolutely. And one of the elements on a tile as it relates to content now that is often forgotten is to ask just a really great question. Create a tile that's a series of questions that invokes commenting, that invokes, if you like being disruptive in your industry, make it disruptive. Get into, whatever works for your industry. Ask a really great question on a tile. Because one of my mentors many, many years ago said, from a communication perspective, the difference between somebody that's good and somebody that's elite, the level of the questions that they ask.
So for those people who are thinking, well, I've got to put out content, I've got to put out facts, I've got to put out tips, you could put out a good question that engages your viewer, your listener, your audience. And
Absolutely.
you're right, it's more difficult to ask, a good question than it is to answer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very well said.
Sally, you're calling them tiles.
Yes.
Do they need to be a particular shape?
Not necessarily. For us, because we work with clients that are in that authority space, they generally are on most social media platforms. So my favorite tile size is an Instagram tile size, because that can be used across all of the platforms. But I also do have clients that are purely on LinkedIn. So for them, we create specific LinkedIn size tiles. But if you want to make life easy for yourself, and that's what I'm all about, then yeah, an Instagram size tile is the best tile, because you can use it across all social media platforms.
Mm. And Sally, how does, if one starts putting out the content in bite size, how do you know if it's working?
It always takes a little bit to get going, because you've got to find your cadence and momentum as it relates to getting the right content out there, and consistency is key. But you usually, if you've got that blend of, you know, educational, entertainment, questioning, and you've got a nice blend of it, you should start to get interactions within a few weeks. If you fall into the bad habit, which I see a lot of people do, going, I'm just going to get some content out there, and it's just you're getting content out there for the sake of it without any clear choreography to it. And it doesn't need to be a lot of choreography or strategy, but just a little bit, you know, a mix that makes it interesting. Then, you know, if it's falling flat for you because you're just getting it out there quickly, it's going to fall flat for your audience. If you're excited by your content, and you've got good messaging, and you've got a good blend, then you should get responses very, very quickly, within a couple of weeks, if not instantaneously.
The images, do they need to be photographs, or could it be a sketch, or could it just be the text itself in a graphic way?
Yeah, absolutely. All of that and above. For some of my clients do actually have their own drawings. They actually do draw for their keynote presentations, etc. So we utilize their imagery. Again, that's part of their brand. So for me to use a photo for them instead of their imagery, it would create a bzzz in their client's head, because it doesn't relate. It's not on brand. So it can be photographs. For me, I like, personally, as a brand, I like to have photographs. I'm not into graphic images, but it depends on what your persona is and what your clients prefer, because that comes back to your clients' learning styles and preferences as well. So when you're thinking of your content repurposing strategy, you're looking at your content as it relates to bite-size opportunities, you need to know who your client is and how they best consume content and how they like to have it fed, because again, we're not doing it for us, we're doing it for our clients.
What have been some of the challenges that you've experienced? Now, you're someone who does it for people, and I imagine there are times that you struggle.
Yes.
Perhaps it's to come up with an idea, or it's to convince the client that your way is better than theirs. Where do you run into the challenges?
Challenges are actually, in all honesty, around getting the imagery right. Often when I work with clients, they don't have a lot of imagery. So they've created keynote presentations, they've got their white papers, they've got their books. There's not a lot of imagery in that. They may have lots of pictures of themselves, and obviously we use that as part of a brand element. But finding the right imagery that is resonant not only to them so they feel comfortable, but really resonates to the audience. So we go through our process is I've got to love it or I hate it. And if it's not I love it, then it's not the right image. So we spend a lot of time going and sorting images and creating a range of images, literally so we can fine tune it down into a stream of tiles or of images that suit the client. So the biggest challenge is finding the right images. Doesn't sound like much, but it's, you know, is it the person at the foreground and the backgrounds, are the ages right? The differences correct? Have we nailed the differences in cultures? There's all those fundamental elements of finding imagery. So in that case, we go for lots and lots and lots and lots, and then we fine tune it back to the ones that resonate both for the client, because the client's got to be comfortable, but really speak to the audience. So images are the challenge. The goal is to find lots and fine tune.
The words that are used, are you a poet? Do you find better words to say what people wanted to say, or make a rhyme?
No, nothing like that. So very much the when somebody's written content, again, regardless of the form, they have their own unique inner genius. They'll have their Sally-isms or George-isms, etc. So if I was to replace words or which would change the context or potentially the feel or the way it was addressed, it wouldn't be them anymore. It would be a version of me. So it's very, very important, as my role is to make sure I'm extracting their words in the essence and the tone, etc., that they say it, because otherwise their audience will know it's somebody else saying it. And how often have you read somebody's article or somebody who's trying to create leverage in their business and they go, I don't reckon they've written that? That is straight away a disconnect with your audience. So it's something that we absolutely can't do. It's got to be in the client's words, because it's their inner genius. It's what they're bringing to their world. It's their, you know, it's their intended message to create impact for their audience. So that's the key. It's their intended message, not mine.
Their words, their message. Got it. What do you say to clients who say, well, Sally, I haven't written a book, and I don't want to have to sit down and write a white paper. Where can I get content from?
They sound exactly like me, because I'm not somebody that writes a lot of content either, but I've always got enough content. So I'm going to say, I know you've got enough content already. And I say that because 8 years ago, one of my mentors said to me, for God's sake, Sally, you've got enough content to write a book. And I thought he was mad. And the reason I thought he was mad is because I just was a speaker and I just did training. So I had a few training books and, you know, sheets of paper that I'd work through with clients. But what we did is we turned a 45-minute presentation that I did that was videoed and a small training manual that I'd created for a 2-day training that went on after that. And that turned into two books. So that's how I discovered repurposing. It's the reverse way of it, because I just thought I'd become an author. So I would say, if you've got journals and you write notes in your journals, if you're a prolific journaler, if you've written blogs, if you're like me, you like to speak and you've done lots of Zoom recordings, or you've got lots of trainings, or you prefer to speak, you can certainly capture stuff on audio. All those different ways in which you create content, regardless of what form it is content that can be repurposed. Think of your Facebook Lives. You know, that's something that a lot of people might do, or they might do a little video, teachable moments. Again, that's content that can be used and created into a different form, like tiles. So you're taking your videos to tiles, etc. So I would challenge people, and I haven't got a USB on my desk, but I would also say, look to your cupboards behind you, your cupboards in front of you. You absolutely have enough content to start something. And if you find an old USB hanging around in a drawer somewhere, I bet you there's content on there that would be still relevant to the audience that you serve. Because as speakers, coaches, and consultants, we're often, you know, 5 years ahead of the clients that we serve. So some of that older content that you've previously created that you actually might be bored with might be perfectly timed for your audience right now.
Sally, what about people who are not speakers, consultants, trainers? What about professionals? What about the accountants, the lawyers, the architects? How can they create content and repurpose it?
Brilliant question. And I love working with these guys, because they always go, no, I don't have any content. And I go, I bet you do. No, I don't have any content. So they've usually got brochures. They've usually got documentation that they have to have as part of their, I'm going to call it compliance. Now that sounds boring, but within some of those elements, they would be repeatedly saying some of that compliance stuff to clients, but in their clients' everyday language. So capturing some of those conversations that they have, if they're able to, or rephrasing some of that compliance stuff that they know so intuitively and instinctively is a form of content that can be repurposed. So I'll just go back through that. Some of their compliance documentation, if they were to look at that, some of the key things that they're repeatedly saying, if they were to audio record that, they could then utilize, or video it, they could then utilize that. They'll have their brochures and their, their services brochures. This is what I do, this is how I go about doing it. They can explain that in tiles or videos or audios again. And they've probably got their coffee conversations, which they say with their mates at the end of the day when they're talking about, hey, I just had this client and we did blah. And they always surprise themselves of what comes out of their mouth when they're serving their clients. And they often will share that over a coffee or around the water cooler. If they get into just good habit of actually potentially recording that while they're having a conversation with their mates, easiest way to create content ever and highly, highly valuable for their audience.
Now, you just gave me an idea there. I imagine another way, place for professionals to find content, it could be in the questions that they typically get from clients and prospects, their FAQs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're frequently asked questions. Or here's another one. Those questions that they really, really, really wish their clients would ask and know that their clients should ask would be a great place to start as well.
So not only the questions that people do ask, but the ones you really want them to ask. Now that's insightful. Sally, and let me turn that one around. What question should I ask you next?
Oh, I would like you to ask me about the money in the boring.
The money in the boring. Now that sounds curious. Please tell us about the money in the boring, because if there's money in boring, then there's a lot of people who are going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, absolutely. So the reason I say that is, and I'll go back to, the USBs where we don't, we've put a USB in the cupboard behind us or content in the drawer behind us because we are bored by it now. We've got excited, we've learnt new stuff, we've become more insightful, we've had, significant forward movement. But if I go back to this, the service-based clients where they're, wanting their clients to ask the right questions, or the clients that we serve that are, on the same journey as us but behind us, the money is in the boring was a statement that a girlfriend said to me when she was sort of regrowing her business, and she went back to the basics. So the money is in the boring, and going back to the basics is where there is always longevity of content and potential profits for yourself. Because when we get bored with it and forget about it, there's a whole audience that we've forgotten about that are earlier in their journey. So if you've got bored with your content and you're wanting to open up a new market or re-engage with an audience that is coming on the journey earlier than you, then that's a great way to start, where to start with content if you're at a starting place, or it's a great place to re-look at content because that's a great way to bring in a new audience or re-engage an older audience that's earlier in the journey.
And I know there's marketing people will tell me that too many businesses change their marketing because they're bored of it. It's working, but they're bored of it, so they change it. But it's working.
Don't mess with what's working. The money is in the boring. And I know that's a really odd phrase, which is why I like it to say it that way, because it becomes memorable. The money is in the boring. And if it's working and you're getting bored with it, don't mess with it. Do more, do more. Bring in new audiences.
Valuable advice. Sally, I believe you have an offer of a free ebook. What would people find in that ebook? How will it help them?
Okay, so the ebook is for people who have written a book, but I'm going to explain how people that haven't written a book can utilize it as well. So the ebook is called The 3 Easy Steps to Turn Your Book into 2 Years Worth of Social Media. So the context is exactly the same whether you've written a book or you haven't written a book. The bottom line is you have content. And if we focus on written form content, so you've got articles, you've potentially got blogs, you've got your sales brochures, you've got your compliance documents that we've talked about before, the 3-step process in reality is exactly the same. It's scan, extract, and create. So you scan your documentation intuitively to find what jumps off the page at you as a teachable lesson or a rant or a story, etc. And then you create it. So the 3-step process of how to extract that content is within that ebook. And even though it's titled for people that have written books, it is exactly the same process regardless of what your content is.
And people, you can find the link to that ebook in the description below. It's on Sally Curtis's website. You'll find that as well below.
George, can I ask you how you are actually already content repurposing? Because I know you are, and I think that would be helpful for your audience to know as well.
Well, I'm glad you asked that because and I haven't bored of it. I haven't got bored yet, so it's still fun. So I'll take here's 2 things I'm doing. So one, I'll write a blog post, and then I'll take a few points, 3 or 4 or 5 points from the blog post, and I'll create a tile. And I published that in the tile in Pinterest, because in Pinterest you can link to, you can put a real link. And then I've taken the same tile and I'll post it in Instagram and even on LinkedIn. I've even had luck. It's funny, I got better views on LinkedIn when I had this image, this tile. So that's worked well. And I started doing the same thing for promoting the podcast itself. And so I've got the, what I did started with, it was boring. It was just a title. But here's what I did now. I've taken the content from something you say, and I'll put your image with my my podcast logo and your statement beside it.
Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And there you also heard some very good insights as to how to use tiles really effectively on Pinterest to help with the SEO, etc., and to also build credibility by working with 2 people's images as you're going through and building reach, and that helps to build familiarity into other people's networks. So there's some great tips from George too, so thank you.
Sally, as we prepare to wrap up, what would you suggest to business leaders, professionals who know they need to get their message out there on a regular basis, but it's a chore? So if there are 1, 2, or 3 ideas that could help them move forward a little bit easier, what might those tips be?
Yeah, thank you. To make life easier for them, I believe everything needs to be plotted into your calendar to start with. So I'm going to say, you know, give yourself 2 hours once a month where you actually do the activity of creation. The step before that is knowing what your big word or your theme is for the year. So say, for example, mine's content or mine's growth. And then my topics underneath that would be content repurposing, events, and networking, for example. So work out what your big word is, what your topics are that you want to share with your audience for the year, and then that can be 2, 3, 5. You know, the simpler you make it, the easier it is for you to get into momentum. So work out your big word, your couple of key topics, and with that thinking in mind, you're starting to form a strategy that'll keep it simple for you. Then when you go about looking for content, you go, oh yes, that piece, that element fits with that topic. Oh, that element fits with that topic. Then you've sorted, so you've got something to work with and a bit of an inclination in your brain as to how to or what to look for when you're repurposing it. So just to recap, set aside some time, a couple of hours a month, work out what your topics and big words are so you can sort during that month so you've got something to work with, and then go through the three-step process in the ebook.
My guest today is Sally Curtis, reminding you that you want your content to be easy for them to consume on their worst day.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.